Good evening. This is CMD Radio. I am Azil, here with the Google.
How you doing?
All right. We're talking about some interesting stuff tonight. A couple really fun articles we're going to talk about today. One of them, we're talking about how to spoof email through an open SMTP relay. We're talking about was a 1.2 million computers are part of botnets. We're talking about 12 years later, Kevin Mitnick is still unforgiven. Ubuntu 7.04, and the features of Microsoft's Windows Vista and the differences in between each version and why it's unnecessary to have 12,000 versions of Vista. To Google.
Hey, how's everyone today? I'm going to be talking about Vista later on as my main topic, and it's just going to compromise of how... actually, before I go any further, just a shout-out to Drake Anubis, helping us get our feet on the ground with this podcast. We had a little trouble in the beginning with the feeds and the site and everything. And by the way, our site is back up with cmdradio.com. You can subscribe to any reader you feel like it. RSS feeds are up. The iTunes feed is up directly now, so if you want to subscribe. But just giving our shout outs to everyone to know that you are appreciated. So continuing, my segment today is about Vista and how many of the features that it shows are really can be found in XP with free programs or, a couple workarounds. But to start it off, I have a couple short articles I found, searching around the internet this week. One was about Apple. AppleInsider.com, it explains how the Leopard is reported to be near final candidate stage. Now, Leopard is the next generation operating system that, Apple is coming out with. It said that its final ship date will be around spring or the June quarter. And what's nice about this is because reading through it, it says that it's not going to be embedding a virtualization technology. It's actually happy with parallel solution and doesn't feel the need to compete. So it's pretty much not offering like a boot camp, what you see now and like the Intel Macs. And Parallels is a software company that allows you to run both operating systems simultaneously. So it's nice to know that at least some companies out there aren't there to compete, and that they're happy with what they're doing, and they're going to leave it at that, which is pretty surprising to me, and that's why I brought this article up. Is, it was just funny to see that, considering that, most of the time it's, oh, they do a great job, but it's our turn to actually show them how it's done, or more to all me. And, I'm not usually into Macs, and I don't really know much about Macs, so I brought this article up because it, incorporates, a good side to some companies. Let's see. Oh, another article I found is how to get the perfect nap. Lifehack.org, this is from, and that's becoming one of my favorite websites only because it has some pretty interesting stuff. I'm always tired. I don't know why. I sleep good at night, but I'm somehow always tired, and it just tells you a couple quick things, and it's surprising because you never thought of it. And there's a couple of different types of naps. The nano nap is 10 to 20 seconds, if that makes sense, and it says it's something like if you nod off on someone's shoulder, but I don't think it helps at all. And then the next one is the micro nap. It's 2 to 5 minutes, and it's shown to be surprisingly effective at shedding sleepiness. The mini nap is 5 to 20 minutes, increases alertness, stamina, motor learning, and motor performance. And the original power nap is 20 minutes, includes the benefits of the micro and mini, but additionally improves muscle memory and clears the brain of useless built-up information, which helps with long-term memory, like remembering facts, events, and names. The lazy man's nap, 15 to 90 minutes, including slow-wave pulse REM sleep. Good for improving perceptual processing also when the system is flooded with human growth hormone, great for repairing bones and muscle. So there's five different types of naps, and I didn't know there was like that. There was that many, and it goes on to tell you how to get the best out of a nap and don't consume too much caffeine and foods that are heavy in fat and sugar because they just mess with the way your hormones react when you fall asleep. And instead, in the hour or two before your nap, eat foods in high calcium and protein, which promotes sleep. So they encourage it, and your body, rest easier when you have that in your body, when you have that in your system. Find a clean, quiet place where passerbyers and phones won't disturb you, which is pretty common because you don't want to be, interrupted by something stupid when you're enjoying your little nap. And the last one is skipping back and forth is once you're relaxed in a position to fall asleep, set your alarm for the desired duration. I found that interesting because I like naps, and maybe I'll follow it one day to help myself get a little more extra sleep and a little more awake for times like now when I want to do the podcast or something. Let's see. What else? What articles do you have to talk about, Zio?
Okay. I read this past week. Kevin Mitnick is still unforgiven. 12 years later, he tried to get an account at the Well, which is an online community for something. I took a look at it. It looked pretty stupid. But a paid membership, and he got this email. This is on March 2nd, but this article is published this week. It says, from the Well Help Desk. Subject, your registration for the membership in the Well to Mitnick at whatever his email is blocked out. We have decided not to offer your membership in the Well. Your payment will be refunded and your application is denied. The Well staff. Now, come on. 12 years later and he's still unforgiven. We all know the story about Kevin Mitnick. I mean, he owns his own security company now. How in the world are you going to deny him a membership from a freaking online community? What kind of damage is he going to do there? And you think he's really going to make that mistake again after what, you know, the stuff he already went through, going through solitary confinement for 8 months and all that shit?
Does the article actually talk about that's the reason why he was denied?
Well, why else would he be denied?
I'm just asking. I don't know. I mean, it could have been something else. I wasn't sure because it's interesting to me, too, because it would be, ridiculous to deny him for such, stupid reasons in the sense of your online community. You should be, embracing him to know that someone that high up and with that much knowledge is coming to, share it with you because that's how I would see it. I wouldn't see it as a negative, but as a positive. If anything, he can teach me something. I can learn something from him. He can help us. But instead of, shunning him away, it's going to make everything not worse, but it just does not seem like an online community to me, someone, to reject someone because of their past, and especially the type of past he has, It was it's been a long story, but I'm just asking if there is any direct relation to that's why he got rejected, or if it's just a speculation because of what he's known to do.
Well, that's all I said was just he's got that email. It doesn't really talk about it.
I was just wondering. But, I mean, either way, it probably is that. I don't think – unless there's some type of mess up in the email registration. But, you got to watch because your past may come to haunt you if you end up, in solitary confinement for stuff that didn't really have to be there. Let's see. Oh, of course, me always talking about Google. I, never fail with another Google blurb. Last episode, I talked about how Google might be introducing a mobile phone. I was pretty excited because I thought it'd be great to see Google out in the phone business, making something cool and easy to use, nice features and nice interface. But Google says outright, we're not doing a mobile phone. And this is from tech.blorge.com. And a top Google executive has denied outright that the company is developing a mobile phone. Last week, the rumor mills were working overtime after Google official speaking in Spain said that the company was investigating offering a mobile phone, and British phone analyst Richard Windsor claimed that during the CEBIT, Google staff confirmed that a Google mobile phone was being developed. Alan Estuse, Senior Vice President of Engineering and Research, said, "We're not doing a mobile phone. I'd like to find something that is broader rather than doing yet another mobile device." So I guess that makes sense because, every company out there is doing one. Apple is, coming out with their new iPhone soon. And every company has a new phone out there. There's always a new device, whether it's a phone or some PDA or pocket PC, something like that. So, a little disappointing, but I can understand. There's no real need for Google to get into that market. They seem to be doing pretty good anywhere else. And it also says, he also goes to continue saying, as right now, it is very difficult for companies to deploy applications. Mobile is a space where it's very difficult to reach a lot of users. That's a premise we're thinking about. So it's pretty much saying that they're not going to focus on individual handsets, but they will be, of course, applications for it, because I know my phone is ready to be used with Google with text messaging and all that other stuff to get responses back from them. So that's all my articles I found. Not too much today, but our main topics is the Vista and spoof email. Anything else for us, Ezio?
I read this on Slashdot, Thursday, March 22nd. According to the folks at Security Focus, the number of bot-infested systems has surged to nearly 1.2 million. This after a big drop in December when lots of people replaced, upgraded their systems. So I guess maybe upgrading Windows or maybe people switching to Linux has caused this decrease. But that's a lot of computers that are infected. I wonder how many people out there have their computers infected and they don't even realize it. They said some of the preventative measures is take a look at your CPU usage. If your CPU usage is really, really high, abnormally high for idling, you might want to check your running processes or look at your outbound internet, see what's going on.
I get worried when you talk about that article because I wonder if I'm part of a botnet, you know? Do you really know? I mean, you hear all the time that exploits that go unknown for months. You know, a botnet for 1.2 million people, obviously there's a patch somewhere that didn't go through. And I don't believe in virus software, only because personally, I just think it's a waste because of things like this where you can get a virus, you can become part of this zombie computer control with the best latest security of Norton or McAfee. And so it makes me think, maybe I am part of it. I don't think I am. I hope I'm not. And I hope I do all the security measures that are right in sense of not opening email attachments or whatever it is and knowing where I'm going for each site. But you never really can be too safe.
Okay, I also read in something in Slashdot, someone was asking, how relevant or useful is it to learn assembly programming in the current era? Well, a lot of people are using C, C++, and C# and higher-level languages, but assembly is still great for, you know, writing drivers, programming microcontrollers. And it is very, very, very highly commonly used in the reversing community as far as for writing keygens and stuff. So this person thinks that assembly is dying out. However, I don't think it is for, you know, low-level hardware hackers who like to play with stuff. Assembly is still very much in use.
Yeah, definitely agree. No need to get rid of it. I mean, how are you going to get rid of anybody? Are you just going to stop? Stop using it? I mean, you can't get rid of a language. You can stop using it, but little too much. If you're going to say something, you know, at least make sense about it. Or don't get rid of it. You can't get rid of it. Doesn't make sense to me on that article.
Also, Ubuntu 7.04, the Feisty Fawn beta, was released this week. I downloaded it. Haven't had a chance to play around with it yet. I'm curious to see what the differences are between that one and a 6.10, which is the current stable release. When I've been reading, it has more device support as far as for laptops. You want to run Ubuntu on your laptop, it's supporting a lot of the internal wireless cards, so you don't have to jump through hoops to get a fucking driver for it. So it'll support it by default, which, you know, really makes Linux more accessible to people who want to learn it. It makes it easier for them to be able to learn it because they won't have to, you know,
struggle to get stuff working.
Struggle to try and get stuff working. You just install it and have it working. So I think that's great.
That's nice. Is there a live CD for that?
Yeah, I believe there is. You can get it off their website. Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Because I'm looking. I just grabbed. I just picked up an old Dell from an old school of mine, old high school. I was throwing them out, so I walked over there and I heard about it, and I picked up a Dell that was running like a 1 gigahertz processor with like 256 SD RAM and like a 20 gig hard drive, and I want to throw some Linux on it because I want to make it like a little media center type thing where I stream, you know, podcasts and everything to my TV, and it's, you know, live CD. Where actually I'll install Linux, but I like to throw out the live CDs first before I start installing things. So I should head over there later and check it out. Anyone should. Linux is fun.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I haven't got a chance to play around with Backtrack 2.0 yet, which is supposed to replace WAX and WAPIX and stuff.
Ah, thirsty.
Take a look into that. Let's see here. I have a really interesting article. It's a nice little walkthrough on how to send spoofed email through a open SMTP relay. This is not a new method by any means, but it's still something that I get a kick out of even today. An open SMTP relay, what it is people who are running a SendMail server or Microsoft ESMTP server, which is strictly used for outgoing mail. But if not configured properly, people can telnet in and manually type in commands and send email from a sender that is unknown or a sender of your choice. You make it come from, like, BillGates@Microsoft.com. I'll be walking you through it on how to do that. Okay, the first thing, this is assuming that you already have an SMTP server that you know is open. I'm not going to give any open ones here. There's plenty of lists out there that already have lists of open SMTP servers, so go find it, Google it. But once you have one, what you'll do is you'll fire up a terminal and use a CMD or PuTTY if you're in Windows, if you're in a Linux environment, which you should be for this kind of stuff. Use Bash, TCSH, Corn, or whatever your favorite shell is. What you need to do is you're going to telnet into port 25, which is where the SMTP runs by default at the server. You're going to be telnetting in. Telnet syntax, in case you don't know, is telnet space server space port. Do this by typing telnet space SMTP server space 25. So, for example, telnet.smtp.test.com/25, enter. You should be greeted by the banner at the top, which will tell you what the server is running, usually sendmail or ESMTP. Then you sometimes need to, quote, greet the server. Not always, but I do, just to avoid the error of sometimes it saying that I had to. Just to be safe, I'll do it all the time. So what you're going to do is you're going to type in HELO space SMTP.test, enter. It doesn't matter what you type, as long as you type something dot something. So you can type in, like, whatever dot A, enter, and it should greet you. It should say hello back, you know, welcome to whatever server. Now you can tell the server what email address you want the receiver to see it's coming from. So this is what you type. You type in mail space from colon BillGates@Microsoft.com, for example. Press enter. It should say sender okay dot 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 BillGates@Microsoft.com. Now you can tell the server where to send the email to. Type in RCPT space TO colon CMDRadio@gmail.com, for example. Press enter. It should say recipient okay, CMDRadio@gmail.com. Now you're going to type the email itself, subject and body. So you type in data, D-A-T-A, enter, and then it should say something like okay, ready for mail or something like that. And it's different for every server. But now what you do is you type in the subject. So you type subject, colon, whatever you want your subject to be, enter. And now you go ahead and type the body of your email. Just be careful that you don't screw up, as you cannot hit backspace in Telnet, because Telnet sees backspace as an actual character. It won't backspace what you already wrote. It just makes it look weird in the email. Don't do it. So be sure you type very carefully. And once you're done typing, press enter, then press period, and press enter again. It should say message sent or message queued for delivery. Different servers are going to give different responses. If everything went well, when the person opens their inbox, they'll see an email from BillGates@Microsoft.com, subject, whatever you typed. Then there you go. That's how you send a spoofed email through OpenSMTP Relay. Now, a lot of times, the email is going to go into your spam folder because spammers like to use OpenSMTP relays to hammer out mail. There's a lot of servers you can find that it won't go into the spam. Just you got to find an open relay that's not really used by spammers, and it won't go to a spam folder.
Yeah, it's interesting. When you talk about how backspace and telnet is a character.
Yeah, it is.
What's it show up as? Is it like a little box or something? Some like unknown? What's it show up as?
I don't know. It looks weird.
Because, I mean, I get spam, you know, once in a while through a Gmail. It'll come through. And, you know, if I don't recognize the subject, I'll read it. And, you know, you'll see the typos like that. And I always wonder, like, you know, if you're going to spam someone, at least type it correctly. But, you know, maybe they are telneting through something. And they're typing something, but it's your backspacing. I don't know. That just made me think, oh, that's why there's maybe typos in a spam. You know, I figured if you're gonna be a spammer, might as well type it correctly so it's more believable to whoever you want to trick into using your services or however you're making money. But you know, that's an interesting point. And also a reminder, we tried this with me, and I tried it as you explained to me the same procedure, and I went through it, but my ISP blocks port 25. So, obviously, I'm not going to be able to go through my ISP to do this because they block it for the same reason that we're doing to prevent spammers or anyone from sending spoof emails. So, you got to, you know, make that available, make that known first. I use Optimum Online. So, if you do have that carrier, that service, or Cablevision, you won't be able to do this, but anyone else should be able to do it. If not, if you find errors, find out, search Google, figure out if you're being blocked from the ISP, or if it should be open on a router. But besides that, it's pretty fun. And again, it's an old procedure to do. It's old process. Nothing new about it. But it's unique and fun. It's cool to fool around with friends.
Yeah, and also SMTP runs default on port 25. So any server that's got SMTP running on it on a port other than 25, then you can do it if your ISP is blocking port 25. You just got to find a server that's running it on a different port, and you'll be able to do it.
Yeah, so a little couple workarounds, and you should be set, right?
Oh, yeah.
Sounds good. Another good tutorial from Aziel. He is good with that. I noticed that. He's a good tutorial man, aren't you? You had a couple of tutorials out there, right?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so if you ever need something, help with something, I'd definitely go to him. He knows what he's talking about, especially in the reverse engineering portion of things. So he's a good man. All right, what's up next? Vista comparison to XP. This is my segment, my topic, and just going to be explaining exactly what it is. Microsoft explains how they market Vista to the general public and what they consider the features or wow, you know, with quotations, of their brand new, shiny, expensive, overrated OS. So I'm going to show you how to use XP with the same fancy features, and I'm going to explain what's the point of having so many versions, and do you need Ultimate? Can you get away with using Home Basic and be set without having to worry about losing features or, you know, spending that extra money on Ultimate? So I'll get right into it. And, I just want to first say that the reason I want to get into this topic is really because I have not seen anyone directly compare the features of Vista and how they might outweigh the already successful XP. Vista has been out since January 30th for the public, and I believe early December for corporate or company use. So I could have discussed this early since it's now almost April, and Vista's been around for just about 2 months, but I figured I let it work itself out and see what I can come up with before I get into it. Now, this article is not about how Vista has bugs and they aren't fixed and crashes left and right or nothing is compatible. That's already obvious. It's only been 2 months, so it's understood that drivers might not work, programs might not be compatible, your video game might crash after 10 minutes because your video driver is still in beta release, or Norton didn't patch their virus software to, show you that Vista is safely patched. That's all old news. There's no need for that. And the basis of my article, the reason I thought about this was because where I work, I sell laptops and they all have Vista on it now. And people come up to me during my job and say, are these new laptops with Vista? Oh yeah, sure. They have nice Vista on it. Well, why do I want Vista? What makes me want to upgrade? And I find myself just staring blank at them like, well, it looks nice, but, I have to, like, put filler in or just hand them the brochure that Microsoft has us give out. I couldn't really think of anything. Like, is there really a reason to upgrade? I don't think so. So, I'm going to first start off with what versions are available for Vista. And there's actually a lot more than some realize. Windows Vista Starter, Windows Vista Home Basic, Windows Vista Home Premium, Windows Vista Business, Windows Vista Ultimate, and Windows Vista Enterprise. So right there's six editions, and there's two versions of each, except for Vista Starter, which is only available to emerging nations, and Enterprise, which is only available to customers participating in Microsoft's Software Assurance Program. So those two versions, the least amount, the lowest one, Starter, I don't know what price on. There wasn't much information about it, considering you had, I guess, be a part of an emerging nation where you're a third world country or something that's getting into computers for the first time. And Enterprise, which is your typical IT situation for deploying it on many systems, across your network. So those two won't be part of my comparison, but just to make you aware that there is six legitimate versions that can be purchased, and out of the six, four of them have two versions each, an upgrade and a full, just like XP did. So basically there's eight versions to work with: Home Basic Regular, and then Home Basic Full, and Home Premium, and all that stuff. So there's a lot of choices to go through, especially if you're the regular Joe and you're not really sure what to do, and you're just getting Vista because you figure you might as well because it's the new thing out there. The way I'm going to go about this comparison is talk about the features directly from Microsoft's website. So I went on the website, found the Vista features link, and just reading them off, and just going to tell you directly from each features they tell you how you can get those features in XP. The first one is finding stuff fast. Instant search helps users locate any document, photo, email, song, video, file, or program on their PC with ease. It's integrated right into the start menu. You hit start, and then there's your little search bar. You can type anything into it through Vista, so it is good. If you type CMD, it comes right up to command prompt and all that type of stuff. But that isn't much of a feature. it still lacks the fact to specify file size, which I always find important because I know a couple of times, you know, I'll be low on hard drive space for whatever reason, and I'm just like, how do I not have hard drive space? So instead of trying to figure out what file's large, I want to search, you know, for 5 gig files, you know, maybe a DVD I ripped or 4 gig files. And I have to go through kilobytes in the search, and that always bothers me because I always can't figure it out. So instead, there's programs out there for XP. One is called the Google Desktop Search. It's a good program. It indexes fast. It's a little resource hungry because it does index on the fly. So that means that when your computer's idle, it will index all the information. But it's up to date. So if you added something like a second ago, it'll be right there. And another program called Indexer One. It's a quick download from download.com. It runs easy. It's free. And you can specify in kilobytes, megabytes, gigabytes, all those different file sizes. So when you do need to search for the big file, it's easy to come across. And it doesn't take as long as a search. I noticed that the search feature in Vista, even though it does like autocomplete, it might take a little longer if you're searching for some pretty big files or some files that only a couple will show up. So that's the first one, you know, for finding stuff fast. It's really not a feature in Vista to me. Next thing is Quick Access. It's new technology in Windows Vista that makes a PC significantly more responsive when performing everyday tasks. Improved startup and sleep performance helps desktop and mobile PCs get it up running more quickly and turn on and off in a snap. Use msconfig. That's really it. Done. Go to msconfig. Set everything up. No, I don't want this starting up. I don't need, you know, this to start, my volume icon from my Creative Sound Blaster. I don't need that to start up. That's fine. You know, I don't need my Skype to start up. You know, that type of stuff. That's all it really is. I mean, stuff that you can easily improve to your computer to make it run quicker, and features that Vista tries to incorporate that are already there. Constant responsiveness. Inconsistency in PC performance can be frustrating. Windows Vista provides innovative technologies, including a memory management system called Windows Superfetch that enables applications to launch more quickly when users start their machines and ensures that these applications will continue to be responsive when it matters most. Basically, it just like it sits in your RAM, the program, and it's a process. And it waits to see if you go idle. If it goes idle, it'll start running programs that you normally would run. Like, it's going to assume you're going to run something. And that it's going to, and when you, it might not think you're going to run it, it's going to shut it down. It's very, and it doesn't have like a set function. It doesn't have a set personality where it just does it according to what you're doing at the moment. And to me, it doesn't seem right. It runs stuff in the background, and it says it runs in the background in low priority mode, so it doesn't really take up usage. But I don't think that helps at all. That's not going to help me at all to have something called Superfetch that grabs programs for me. I've been using Vista for a while on a decent machine, and it's definitely slower than XP. Definitely slower. What's up next? Keeping an eye on what's important. Users can see information they care about right away with Windows Sidebar, which brings real-time information such as weather and news directly to the desktop to easy-to-use programs called gadgets. And on mobile PCs with exterior screens, Windows Sideshow technology, available in Windows Vista Home Premium and Business, also in Ultimate, enables Vista to extend information from the PC onto a wide range of devices. So the first thing it talks about is Sidebar. It's a widget. There's tons out there that will work the same. Yahoo Widgets 4. Very popular, a lot of downloads on download.com, and there's a lot of widgets for it. A lot of people who have widgets set up directly so you can monitor your weather, your stocks, all that fun stuff. And again, Google Desktop will do the same thing. You can get your widgets with Google Desktop, and at first there was a limited amount of widgets, but now there's plenty. So that's also a good programs to use, and they're free, easy to use. They're not going to be resource hogs, and the main thing that Vista, you know, features is, well, actually, going back to that, keeping an eye on what's important, the sideshow technology. Really, what it does is, if you have like a laptop, like a new laptop that comes out, that has a screen on the outside of it, like cell phones have two screens. Well, when you close the laptop and power it off, the sideshow technology kicks in and allows that little mini screen to become an MP3 player, so that instead of you're killing your battery, it just uses the screen as an MP3 player. All right, it seems okay, but this is only applying to laptops. You know, it narrows the range of devices you can use it, because I'm not going to put a small screen on my desktop computer. And, you know, phones aren't going to be running Vista. There's definitely not enough power there for a phone to start running Vista. So to me, it seems too narrow-minded for that to make any difference in my work style for Vista. Let's see. Skimming through, there's a couple other things I want to touch upon. Vista's appearance. Oh, with their Windows Aero user interface, it provides a translucent computing surface, graphic pictures, and other content spring to life on glass-like windows, which also remove distracting on-screen clutter. And now that's directly from what Microsoft says, removes distracting on-screen clutter. It's a bright interface. It's all candy-like, and, you know, it's eye candy. That's not going to remove distracting color. It's going to create it. Like, you're going to be more drawn to the background on your PC and less. And to me, that doesn't make sense, how making something more vibrant and more easy to look at is removing distractions. That doesn't seem to make sense to me. And if you do like those translucent windows, all that type of stuff, Style XP. It's a skin software that runs on the background in your computer. You can make it tons of different things. I like it. It's easy to use. Skin Studio XP, also similar program. And Windows Blinds. All three of them have high reviews. They do cost money, though. And there's some trial versions. But depending on how you get your software, whether you pay for it or not, is up to you. So, you know, you could make this free. And they work just as good, and they look sometimes better because you have a lot more variety to choose from than the few styles that Vista offers. And it talks about layered security in Vista, how it has Internet Explorer 7 and Windows Defender built into it. Those are available on XP. Those aren't features. Features, to me, are something that is new that does not involve the old operating system. Internet Explorer 7 is available in XP. Now, it does say that there's a protected mode, but I think it's more of like an anti-phishing mode that if you go to a website with a fake login form, it'll tell you. But use Firefox. Just use Firefox overall. I mean, why bother even worrying about Internet Explorer 7? But if you want to use it, you love it, it is available in XP. So if that's your reason to move to Vista, don't need it. And Windows Defender, that first came out for XP, and it was decent. It's not that bad. Microsoft bought Giant Spyware Company, and that is what Windows Defender is based off of, is the Giant Spyware, the company, their program, and they made it their own, Defender. And that's available in XP too. So this layered security that Vista talks about, to me, it doesn't make any difference because it's old news. It's old technology. Family safety settings, it goes talking about a parental control, so you can limit what time of day your child can use the computer, the website, restrict PC games, you know, the ESRB rating, so if it's rated M, they can't play it. I don't think that's going to work. It sounds good on paper, but kids are becoming more and more computer savvy by the day, you know. You put a restriction on them, they're going to figure a way to get around that restriction. Even if they're not the hacker mind, or they want to, you know, be rebellious against the big software companies, you know, they'll realize that, you know, if they go onto the admin account, they might not have a password because, you know, dad never put a password on his username. They could play their favorite game. So I don't think that's going to matter, being able to restrict computer usage with the safety setting. If kids want to do something, they're going to do it. They're going to get around it. They'll figure it out somehow. So that doesn't make a difference to me. Let's see. Easily managing music, Windows Media Player 11. That was also released in XP. All these things to me seem just like, you know, like a bad record just repeating itself. I don't understand. This doesn't make sense to me. XP, you know, XP offers 11. It works nice. I enjoy it. I upgraded to 11. Vista offers Windows Media Player 11. You know, I just don't grasp this whole thing. Now, what they do, there is one thing that Vista does offer that nothing else is DirectX 10. You can only use DirectX 10 in Vista. The games that support it can be played both in XP and Vista with DirectX 9. But if you want those new lifelike graphics that are pretty amazing, seeing some early beta screenshots online, That is the only thing that, right now to me, is any different than XP. So, that's really it about my comparison. In the end, it's XP has the same features that Vista does. Vista looks like Mac, but Macs look like Mac since Mac's been around. And I'm repeating that for the second time because it's true. Why bother getting all these fancy features when they're all available in XP already? And you don't have to change anything. XP isn't too bad of an operating system. It's okay. It's substantial for what, you know, it's being used for. And although it comes out with patches and bugs all the time, there's probably plenty of Vista exploits and other, you know, viruses that are waiting to happen that may be even worse than XP. So, you know, take my advice, stick with XP, ditch Vista, grab some free software, and, you know, have fun.
Or just use Linux and get the open source community.
Yeah, so just screw Microsoft and all, and just you know, use Linux. But I know that some people aren't into the whole Linux scene. I mean, some people that we listen to our show understand what Linux is and probably is aware of the features compared to Vista or any other operating system for that reason. But others, maybe they just wonder, should I upgrade? Should I? And I figured I'd clarify some things. No need to upgrade. No benefit. Stick with XP. Works great. It's fine. All right. Let's see. Any other closing articles we have today?
No, I don't believe so.
All right, so, you know, today was a little shorter episode, I think. Let's see what time we're running at. It's a little shorter than usual. But we'll be back next week, and next week I'm going to be talking about HDCP, High Definition Content Protocol. What is it, and what does it do, and should you be worried if your TV or graphics card is HDCP compliant? So that's it for this week's episode. I'm the Google.
And I'm Aziel.
Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a great day.